You're listening to Juno Afternoon. Thank you for being here with us on this gray, rainy day. I'm Rhonda McBride. But you might call our next guest a rainy day friend to Juno, Captain Dan Blanchard, CEO of Uncruise Adventures, a small cruise ship company that expanded its business in Juno this summer. It won't quite take the place of the big cruise lines, but after this summer, we might learn some things about what kind of a role small cruise tours play in the Juno economy. And recently, Blanchard held a small celebration at the wharf to launch the tourism season. Glasses were filled with champagne, and Dan Blanchard made a toast.
So, my toast to you. Here's to lying, cheating, and stealing. If you must lie, be it with those or the one that you love. If you must cheat, be it to cheat death. And this is the big one right now in the history of our world. And if you must steal, be it to steal moments like this with people like you. Cheers.
Well, I think those tourists had quite a few good moments because we've had great weather this week. They took off on Sunday. Well, Captain Dan, and I understand that it's okay to call you Captain Dan Blanchard because you really are a captain. You pilot your own boats. Maybe for starters, you can tell us a little bit about that history and about some of the other members of your family as well.
Well, first of all, Rhonda, it is great to be here. So great to be in person again. But, you know, the Captain Dan goes back a long ways. I grew up on a tugboat in Puget Sound, north of Seattle. And, you know, being on the water has always been something just first nature to me. And I did get my captain's license when I was 18. I'm happy to say that my daughter is the captain of the Safari Quest, a boat that just came in today. And my son is the port captain at Seattle Maritime Academy. So, you know, it's something happened there. It went through the vein of genetics to my children.
It's kind of like John Binkley's family, because I think some of his children went on to be a captain. Of course, John is more known for his politics, but I think he can also pilot a boat.
Oh, yeah. John's a captain, as was his father, who I knew quite well at the time. So that is true with Captain John as well.
Well, that is really special to have that. So you have had a long relationship with Juno. I know that you've been based out of Washington State up until recently, but can you tell us a little bit about that relationship that you've had with this community?
Yeah, you know, I first came to Juno for work in the mid-80s. I was a young guy, 25 years old, and like so many, found Alaska to be just exactly what I wanted for home, and moved in and out of Juno and Gustavus and Petersburg over up until 2010 when I came back to Juno permanently. Now, our company has always been a Juno corporation with an office here. But just recently, we decided to make a bigger move and move our primary office from Seattle to Juno. And I'm so happy. And the ironic thing, Rhonda, is the very office I applied in 1985 or so is the office I just started renting. And, I mean, talk about irony and how beautiful things can come back and meet you in the face.
Full circle, huh?
Full circle.
So before we go on, that toast you gave, that was kind of a full circle sort of toast.
Yes, indeed.
With a wink and a smile. Semi-serious, though.
You know, it ends with the importance of community. And at the end of the day, that is the most important thing we can have. And right now, today, how can that ever be more important?
In so many ways, we learn all the time. So what precipitated your decision, though, to expand into Juno? What were the circumstances that set the stage?
Well, first of all, we've been adding in Juno for a few years, but we made a major change to move our headquarters based on just a visceral feeling of, one, being absolutely loved by Alaska and feeling needed and wanted and treated well. I mean, I have to say that through COVID, Alaska has been so generous of heart. Our own governor, our federal representatives have worked hard to make sure my company and others have stayed alive. And that simply just never really happened in Washington. And in fact, it was almost a combative relationship sometimes. And recently, they shut us down on very short notice. We had our smallest boat, one of our original ones, the Safari Quest, which is only 22 passengers, was ready to sail with a charter group of 11 people. And the state of Washington wouldn't allow these 11 fully vaxxed people and our crew, which was fully vaccinated and tested, to sail. And we'd already had guests in Seattle. So that was kind of the final straw. And, you know, it was just time to sit there and go, during COVID, when a lot of my staff is working from home, this is the right time to really move not only to a place that wants us, but is really where our heart and soul is at.
And probably where the tourists want to go,
yeah.
too.
Well, yeah, it's a big – I mean, Alaska is, in any given year, is between 65 and 75% of our entire revenues as a company.
So what precipitated your decision to have all crew vaccinated, all passengers? I mean, that probably is a key decision for people booking berths on your tour boats.
Yeah, that's a very good question. And I think that, you know, I can probably speak for other businesses as well that have gone down the same path. But, you know, like so many, when the vaccine came out in December, big promises of 20 million people being vaccinated by the 1st of January, you know, we got 10% of that. January was lame. And we were very concerned if we were going to have a season, quite frankly, because we realized that to be successful in this environment, we needed vaccinations. So sometime in early March, you know, we realized that the vaccine was coming out in big numbers, that in Juneau and Southeast as a whole, we are way ahead of the curve. So we notified our guests on March 1st that we are, you know, highly recommending they get vaccinated. We let them know on the about 2 weeks later that we were going to fully vaccinated cruises. And then we let the world know on my birthday on March 22nd, which I thought was kind of cool. But, you know, the result of that, Rhonda, was we had about 1% of our guests that just said, no way, I'm not going to get the vaccine. I'm an anti-vaxxer, whatever reason. But the vast majority of our guests that even had moved to 2022 cruises have come back to 2021. And all of a sudden, our phones went off the hook. People want to travel in a vaccinated situation. And it's a huge market. And I'm happy to say that that decision went very right for us. In other words, it was the correct decision.
So as far as being vaccinated goes, you know, we think of vaccination as good for us, a healthy thing to do. But looking at the economy, does it help you attract business to be able to say that your destinations are very well vaccinated statistically, even compared to other places in the lower 48?
Oh, yeah. And that was a big part of our message when the governor came on in March to help us announce this, as well as Mayor Beth, to talk about, you know, Juneau and Southeast Alaska as a whole and how far ahead we were at that time. And that helps people feel comfortable about the destination.
So I was at your sort of celebratory party watching people, and I could tell that in this room full of people without masks, because all had been vaccinated, there was almost sort of a joyful, carefree feeling, like people felt this sort of freedom that they haven't felt in a long time.
Yeah. Isn't that a joy? That was a joy to feel that vibe. And I think it's coming out of COVID, but it's also kind of the nature of what we do. You know, the name of my company is Uncruise Adventures. But our guests, after they leave, they put an F in front of un, and they call it Fun Cruise Adventures. Because one of our goals is if people aren't laughing and smiling and maybe a teardrop at the end of the trip when they go, or maybe just outright bawling, we haven't succeeded. And so I think that fits in there too.
I think what people are curious about is how your cruises fit into the Juneau economy overall. So how long are they typically?
Almost all our trips in Alaska are 7 days, but we do have combination trips that are 14 days, and we also do trips into the interior that might add to make it a 10 or a 14-day trip. So the boats generally do round trip Juneau, also, although they also go to Sitka and come back and Ketchikan and come back. So there's a whole variety of itineraries they can take, but everyone goes through Juneau.
So how does that impact Juneau? I mean, if people are on a boat, they don't perhaps have as much time to visit this community, or do they?
They actually do. In fact, the vast majority of our guests come in prior to the cruise. I have a gentleman sailing this Sunday that came in 6 days ago. He's spending 6 days by on his own just exploring Juneau. I had five people I met with last night that came in 3 days early. So that it's very common that people come into Juneau and stay either early or after the trip. I mean, let's face it, if you're going to come to Southeast Alaska, you have to see the capital, in my mind. And most of our guests want to see Juneau. They want the capital experience.
So what are you hearing from them about their expectations of what they want to see in Juneau?
You know, it varies. I had coffee with some of our guests this morning, and, you know, we were lining out, okay, our local museum opens up at 10. Then you can go at noon and go to the Alaska State Museum. And, oh, by the way, the tram opens. And, you know, so it's just a lot of planning that goes on. But they love the experience of Juneau, not only from seeing the capital city and the museums and such, but, you know, we have something in Juneau that's unique. We literally can walk out of our doors and, you know, within 5 minutes be on a trail someplace. And my traveler is an adventure traveler. So they not only enjoy the adventure of learning, but they enjoy the adventure of being in the outdoors and hiking and climbing up to Mount Roberts like many of us in town do every day. And so it's a rich experience for them, not only with Juneau, but with the surroundings of Juneau.
Pretty amazing, isn't it, that all of this is right at the doorstep in one community. And I'm curious, we have a plaza that Sea Alaska is putting in to even capitalize more on tourism, and it seems like Native culture gets the opportunities for everyone, Natives and non-Natives alike, to experience this culture and appreciate it, just continue to grow. But do you think this vision of making Juneau a capital for the arts, for Native arts, Southeast arts?
It's one of the most wonderful things I believe we've ever done. And so much thanks to Sea Alaska for pushing that forward. I believe when that whole center is done, it's not only going to change the way people view Juneau, but it's also going to be one of probably the best Native markets anywhere in the world. And we have that in Juneau, a town of 32,000 people? That blows my socks off.
And we have the Juneau Jazz and Classics Festival coming up. And a lot of your passengers will be on a cruise when a lot of that happens, but maybe some that will come off of this current cruise will stay on and experience that. Also at the State Museum, we have the Spirit Wraps Around You exhibit going on, a rare collection of Northwest Coast Native art and weaving. And it's been years in the making with some very rare blankets that are on display. I mean, do things like that help?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, those are very big in a traveler's mind, particularly, again, the kind of psychographic that we have. And I will say that's true for most small ships like mine, whether it be Alaska Dream Cruises or Lindblad or others. That is a very big key for this client, is to kind of take and pull the curtain back on the community and really see what it's about.
So when you think about tourists and trying to draw more people, different kinds of people, how are you marketing yourself? I mean, I know that probably the most well-off clients are used to having tours like this, but how are you branching out?
Well, you know, our whole marketing emphasis is we're really attached closer to the adventure travel trade world than we are the cruise ship world. I mean, thus the name Uncruise, right? So it's really – it's interesting because if I was to go back when in the mid-'80s when I took that job as the captain of the boat in Glacier Bay, the client back then was happy to see. They were happy to get up on the bow of the boat and see a glacier, maybe with a cognac in their hand and celebrate. But today's client, the post-World War II, the baby boomer, particularly the latter half, they can't just look at it. They have to touch it. They might have to crawl on top of it. They want to feel the cold of the glacier on their face. So it's a different kind of traveler that we have today, and I believe that's going to go forward for some time.
So let's talk about diversity a little bit, because on your website, very prominently, there's a lot about your company's philosophy of being open to diversity, encouraging it, and just sort of sending a message that is an important value to your company.
Well, yeah, and you know, it's as basic as just being fair, simply being fair. I mean, there's no difference between the color of my skin and another as far as the content of our soul, right? And so we may have different colors, but that does not change who we are necessarily or our potential. So we've always held it and welcomed diversity in our ranks. I have to say that we have some of the first female captains in the industry that have sailed with us. Makes me so proud. I mean, even my own daughter is a captain. Is a female in a male world, that's a big thing. And when it comes to diversity of skin of color or diversity of thought, I find that all quite welcoming. I love to travel the world, and the last thing I ever want to do when I'm traveling the world is be around people just like me. I want to experience culture.
Well, this crush of interest now with the Black Lives Matter movement has kind of raised this big awakening in our country. Discussions about how national parks are really not visited by African Americans in large numbers. And it seems to me that a lot of these cruises, particularly the adventure cruises that have a more financially better off clientele, that you don't see that much diversity. It's primarily white or European.
And, you know, that is often the case. I'm happy to say, though, that we're starting to see that change. And, you know, change comes slow on these type of things because different groups find their different areas that they're used to, they're comfortable with. But it is changing. And we're seeing a lot more activity, both in our crew and in our guests of many different cultures and races.
So have you seen it grown in the last few years?
Yes, definitely. There's no question about it.
So that's kind of an interesting sort of phenomena in the tourist industry.
I think it's just with the whole of society, particularly travel within the United States. If you leave the United States, it's often that you have race and ethnicities, I should say, on any travel you might have. But it does seem to be in the United States that it's primarily, you know, folks of European descent that would travel on our boats in the past. But that is rapidly changing.
So let's talk a little more about the economy. There's an invisible side to the cruise industry and many businesses that you don't see, the businesses that depend on you for their business, the supplies that you buy. How big is your footprint in Juneau?
It's pretty big in the sense of how much, you know, there's what a guest spends, right? So we know that, you know, a guest is going to spend probably 3 days in a hotel. They're going to go out to dinner for three meals a day. They're going to go to our different stores. And our what they spend is quite a bit higher. But the hidden number is the fact that, you know, we're buying our supplies, whether it be from Almaga Distillery in town. My tongue got twisted on that one. Or from Alaskan, or, you know, all our seafood comes from Alaska. We're buying all our fuel here and as many local goods as we can. But just like all of us that live in Juneau, we're also relying on the barge from the Lower 48. But we try to minimize that as best we can.
So what about other businesses that support your industry?
You know, there are so many businesses that support, and I'm so thankful for them. Like I say, whether it's Petromarine down on the fuel dock or Super Bear or many of the different stores that we buy from, we try to get local products as best we can. But that goes beyond just Juneau, too. You know, we get our oysters from farms at Prince of Wales and out in Icy Strait and even north of town here. So it really just depends. And it's seasonal, too, of course, when we're talking, you know, food.
Well, that's good to hear that they get to sample some Alaska seafood. Maybe they'll want to keep shopping for Alaska seafood when they go home.
You know, just I hope so.
All these ripple effects that happen. So one question I think that is on people's mind is, you know, you've expanded your presence in Juneau this summer, but is that just temporary? Is this going to go away in another year when we sort of come back to normal, hopefully?
Well, coming back to normal, whatever normal means, right? Because normal in today's business world means a lot of people are working from home, and we found that that's highly successful. So for us, it's the right time, not only because of my own personal disgust with the state of my birth, but also because we now have so many staff working at home. Many staff that we've added over the years, and particularly this year out of Juneau, just make it fit. And this won't be a short-term change. We've already talked about with our landlord about expanding our offices as we go into next year again. But also people will still be working at home, even in Juneau here, that work for us. So it's kind of a, I don't know, maybe it's the most magical time to be in business and for people to be happy while they have a toddler at home, rather than going into the office. I just find this all very fascinating, and the new norm to be pretty exciting.
Well, you know, it is, maybe it's a cliche, but the best of times, the worst of times. Maybe it was Charles Dickens that said that. I'm not sure.
I remember, but something like that.
But, you know, the pandemic has been a big learning lesson, painful in many, many ways, but eye-opening in all ways. What's your takeaway from the pandemic?
Oh, you know, as a business person, it is pivoting. At first, when we used to use that word in terms of COVID, I didn't like it, but I've gotten very fond of it because, you know, at every step of the way, we've had to be agile, we've had to be quick, we've had to be smart. You know, we had Washington kicked us out, and we immediately added 3 sailings in Juneau and flew the people to Juneau so they could take their trip. Those are the kind of things as a small business person that COVID has re-taught us, I think. And so I think there are, you know, there are good results of this time we've been through.
COVID has re-taught us many things and taught us many new things. Just one final question for you is of course, coffee table talk around Juneau as well as water cooler talk is about the 3 initiatives that are currently circulating that would limit cruise ship traffic if they're passed, if one of them is passed. What is your take on that? Would it have an impact on your business?
Well, first of all, I want to say that when I first read those, I thought, that doesn't sound too bad. But then when I got into the details about what it would do, it was devastating. As far as my business goes, there's no direct impact, but there's a lot of indirect impact. For instance, you know, we're a town of 32,000 people, hidden far away from most travel. And if it were not for the marketing that those ships do, I can tell you I would not be in business today. I ride on the coattails of all that marketing, as does the entire state. So I believe that for me it would be damaging, not directly, but indirectly. But I think the biggest thing is there's this idea that all these shops that are downtown and all the vendors that, you know, take cruise ship people out, that they're not Juneau residents, and they are. And, you know, it just pains me to see the families that I love and hold dear that are in business here potentially going through the full second year with no ships, but then to even have that livelihood taken away from them by the initiative process is just painful. I actually have gone from kind of mildly thinking it was cool to just saying this is an anti-livelihood initiative.
But you can see the point, though, of people who have been frustrated by having maybe too many tourists or the patterns that might be adjusted. So you think this is an opportunity to maybe do a little resetting, and even if we don't get the initiatives on the ballot?
I think all of us sit here and go, you know, we've worked with the tourism best management practice for years so that what happens over here is our visitor industry, but we all have our happy neighborhoods and this kind of thing. And that needs to go further. We need to work with that process. I believe that, you know, for a year we worked on a visitors task force, which I was a member of, to bring some sanity to this. And we took a year's worth of testimony from the public, but yet COVID didn't allow that to be implemented. So, yes, I agree. We have to look at this. We have to maintain our quality of life in Juneau. But you don't do that and put people at risk at the same time because of just, I think what I now see is initiatives that weren't real well thought out on what the real impact would be.
So it's an opportunity for us to learn a lot, perhaps, and maybe we should take that opportunity to understand the bigger picture.
Yeah, and what we can and can't do, too. You know, two big private docks, we can't just say to those investors, those residents of Juneau, that you can't have a ship on Saturday. That's a tough pull legally to do.
So there's a lot of moving parts to that.
It's not near as easy as it sounds.
Well, we'll have to come back to that discussion as it evolves. But I want to thank you so much for being with us today, Captain Dan Blanchard.
Rhonda, thank you very much. It's been a pleasure.
It's been great to hear from you and learn about all these things today. Thank you so much.